Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With us today is Daniel McAdams, our famous co-host.
Okay. Good morning, Dr. Paul. How are you?
Ready and raring to go, aren't you?
Got me off guard here, yeah.
Okay. We expect a lot from you.
No, it's going to be a big day.
And you always do a great job.
Thank you.
Okay, we have a couple subjects today. Of course, we want to talk a little bit, a couple updates on coronavirus and activity. There are a few little hints there that maybe the people are a little bit ahead of the governments.
Yeah,
and that's good. That's what we've sensed here in this country. But also, wanted to get back and not let people forget about foreign policy, because foreign policy could be a big issue even without, coronavirus. But coronavirus is what's in the news and people looking for more information. But it's also, things are going on. And one thing I would like to get you to talk about a little bit will be this thing about Soleimani, being killed. Was that about a year or so ago?
Yeah, it was in January,
I think. Here. Yeah, the president personally directs, yes, go ahead and kill him. And it's led to some blowback already. But now this looks like a continuation of, I would call it, blowback.
Yeah.
Because the more retaliation, and they're talking about the CIA now said that they're planning to try, to assassinate the rather new ambassador to South Africa, who's not very much in politics, doesn't have much of a political... Her main liability is she and Trump get along, So it's probably a true story, but it might be a true fake story. Who knows? But it's serious because that Soleimani, that was a major event to kill him. He was in charge of the Revolutionary Guard. That's the most prestigious, defense operation they have in Iran.
Yeah.
And then he was singled out. It was rather strange. It wasn't like he was, they used to picture Castro in fatigues out doing the fighting. This is exactly, he looked more like a diplomat.
Yeah.
Not that he wasn't quite capable of taking a pro-Iranian position using the violence, but compared to what? Compared to what our CIA does, compared to our coups and the bombings and things that we do. But anyway, he was deemed unnecessary and a very, very dangerous person, and he was taken out. And I don't think it is going to go away, because there's been other things announced that we will make sure that our sanctions and embargoes and the Iranians have no ability to buy any weapons from China and China and Russia. That's all just aggravation that's going to keep this thing smoldering. So I would think that the people in Iran has a lot of strong feelings about this. And since this all started back in 1973, it's been smoldering for a long time. And certainly since 1979, it's gotten much worse, and it's not going to go away.
Yeah, this latest thing. First of all, on Soleimani, he the other thing that's important, he was the architect of really the fight against ISIS. And Trump likes to claim that the U.S. killed 100% of ISIS. Not true. His predecessor, Obama, helped bring ISIS to power and bring al-Qaeda to power in places like Syria and Iraq. So the idea that we killed them was actually Soleimani who did it, and he controlled a lot of the militias in Iraq. So killing him made no sense, other than the fact that he could put the lie to what we're saying about us being involved. But this so-called plot was exposed by Natasha Bertrand. She is a well-known neocon stenographer who writes for Politico. They love to leak these kinds of stories. And here's basically what she said. A U.S. government official told her about this plot on Ambassador Marks, U.S. ambassador to South Africa. It was confirmed by, quote, another official who has seen the intelligence. So there is no named official. There's no even named agency. We assume it's the CIA. But the plot is salacious. They want to kill this U.S. ambassador to South Africa, all unnamed sources, as a retaliation against Trump's assassination of Soleimani. The question is, why? Why would they want to hit Ms. Marks? She's best known for designing very expensive handbags. I don't think Mrs. Paul has one. They cost $40,000 each. Maybe she does, but my wife certainly doesn't have one. Princess Di had one. So that's what she's famous for. She's given a lot of money to Trump. So Trump says, hey, why don't you go down to South Africa, be the ambassador, get some sun, have a nice time. So it doesn't make any sense for them to kill her. It has zero value. The South African intelligence services said this is completely bogus. Quote, not likely to be real. They've seen no evidence. They said, well, keep an eye out. We've seen no evidence. And the thing about it, Dr. Paul, this may play well to an American audience who's sort of weaned on Hollywood movies. They want a big smash-up. The reality is that Iran's response to the assassination of Soleimani has been very measured and very precise to this point. Iran, at the beginning, said, we will retaliate. Our goal is to have American troops out of the Middle East, stop meddling in our affairs. And every step they have taken to this point has been moving toward that goal. There were an attack on two U.S. Bases in Iraq by Iranian-backed militias, which caused some injury to U.S. troops, but not a lot of deaths. It wasn't to escalate to justify Pompeo's desire to bomb. There have been dozens of militia attacks on U.S. bases, including, I think, just a day or so ago. So the Iranian idea is basically death by a thousand cuts. We will chase you out by doing these little things that fall below the threshold for a massive response because we want you out of the Middle East. And that's what they've been doing systematically since then. So the idea that they'll have a huge dramatic explosion by killing this ambassador, it really, frankly, it's just hard to swallow.
You know, the thing that we're dealing with is this offer by so-called moderates or even the Trump position that you don't want to send troops in by the tens of thousands. Matter of fact, you want to de-escalate, bring troops home and not look like you're going to get our troops involved. We don't want to see the body bags. At the same time, just like Eisenhower was very excited about using the CIA for overthrows. And, of course, there was no hiding, and Trump was proud of the fact that, I gave him the direction. He was a bad guy.
Yeah.
But it's just recently we discovered that in 2018, he said the same thing about Assad.
Yeah.
He's a bad guy, and of course, Obama probably would agree with him, since he was the one that decided we had to go to war against him. Obama should have been cheering him on. But Trump said, let's go get him. I shouldn't even make a pun. Uh-huh. One of our favorite generals, Mattis, was Secretary of Defense. Anyway, when Trump said we ought to go and get Assad, it was Mattis who said, no, we shouldn't do it. So a bit of common sense all of a sudden fell in place. But this idea that doing these kind of things and a little bit of retaliation here and there and a few people die, it will never eliminate the downside and the blowback potential of us getting involved like that. And that's what I fear. When the policies are wrong, they'll get out of control. Yes, we've gotten by. Fortunately, we haven't had to send in, what did George W. Bush send in? 250,000 or more troops in the Middle East. We had to remake the Middle East. Well, I'd like the Middle East to remake themselves without our presence in there and with us minding our business. But, and he actually, I think, admitted to the fact that Mattis did tell him not to do it. He sort of blackballed it.
Yeah.
And he said, we can do it either way. We can do it if it doesn't matter. He still is a bad guy, and who knows what will happen next.
Yeah, he essentially made fun of Mattis. Hey, I was ready to take the guy out, but Mattis, that wimp, he didn't want to do it. And that's sort of his style. He did that on Fox and Friends, I think, yesterday. But this is the problem with Trump. He's got this tough guy, shoot from the hip mentality. That may work in real estate. That may work in the circles he runs in. But when you are in charge, when you're the commander-in-chief of the massive military might that we have, it doesn't make a lot of sense to act that way. And certainly that's the one thing. His personality, his style, his doing this, and now we know he's capable of it. He killed Soleimani. It doesn't do well because, as you say, the danger of blowback, it makes our troops more vulnerable anywhere in the world. It makes our diplomats, it makes even just Americans on vacation more vulnerable. When you start assassinating people, you create targets. So it doesn't put America first. But the other thing about it is it shows what bad information the president continues to receive from his top advisors. Because if he thought, this was after the Khan Shaykhun so-called gas attack in 2017, Remember, he decided to lob 59 missiles instead, which made the military-industrial complex thrilled because they got to build new missiles. But when the smoke cleared, literally and metaphorically, there really was very little effort or very little evidence that Assad was behind this. In fact, we talked about it. I went back and looked at some of our shows at the time when I was preparing this, and we were just scratching our heads because UN chemical inspectors had just arrived into the country. The attack took place in an area controlled by the White Helmets, who presented all the evidence to, and the White Helmets are, you know, are with Al-Qaeda, presented all the evidence, created all the evidence. They're down there in flip-flops and T-shirts handling sarin gas. Right. So the whole thing fell apart. And even Mattis himself said, I think in December of that year, you know what, we had no evidence that Assad was involved, that his government was involved in either this attack or the 2013 Ghouta attack. So reality is that Mattis, for all, you know, probably a lot of criticism he could take, at this point, he actually knew the intelligence. My big question would be, had Trump even been shown the intelligence that the U.S. government had that Assad was not involved in it? Or did Pompeo and the others just sort of keep that from the president?
Do you ever stop and wonder, does Trump have a precise foreign policy in his head? And you know, one that is a possibility, but even though I don't quite believe it, is maybe he wants to appear tough and soft, a peacemaker and a warmonger, use the threats. And he does it so often. You know, he's a tough guy here. So he appeals to the hawks. And the hawks, you know, well, it's not enough, but it's better than nothing. But then he goes, we're bringing the troops home, and we're going to have more peace treaties than anybody ever had. And all of a sudden, he comes across for peace. And it may be, you know, an adjustment of policy, but I don't think it's adjustment or a firm conviction on position. But, you know, the people in the middle tend not to be precise. They like it where they can go, well, on this hand, we can do this. On the other hand, they call them the realists. I think they're unrealistic that you can get by on this.
Yeah.
They say that we can do whatever we want in the middle. We're neither for strong national defense and minding our own business. You know, certainly we wouldn't want an empire. You know, and then they say that. And then they play this game. So I think that position in the middle is very dangerous, especially in economics, you know, because if you're in the middle, you concede half of everything that's bad to the other side. You give up too much. And there certainly are people. We at times say, you know, look what he said. Look what he did. He's going to bring some troops home. Yeah. And then the next day, something else goes on. And here you read all this thing that he should. But a lot of Americans would say, sure, that was a bad guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, but how many bad guys are there in the world? And how many times are they worse people when we're in their face trying to poke a stick in their eye, you know? So I think so much we end up doing things on somebody having a policy like this that really doesn't protect our security. So if you were a pure pragmatist for national security, I don't think this approach of trying to appease everybody, you really have a strong national defense. I vote for non-interventionism.
And how many actual bad guys are we very much playing footsie with, like Mohammed bin Salman and all these guys? So, but the thing about this Politico plot, you know, to kill, the Politico reported plot to kill South African ambassador, this serves a purpose, and I think it's a propaganda purpose, and it's picked up breathlessly by our own American Pravdas, the Washington Post, the New York Times. You remember, Dr. Paul, just a couple of months ago, the headlines were screaming, Russia paying Taliban to kill U.S. troops in Afghanistan, as if the Taliban need a paycheck to do it. They don't want us there. But what it did is it raised the temperature of anti-Russian feeling, and it slowed the process at the time of us getting out of the longest war in history. So it served the purpose. The headlines were blazing, but a few months later, in fact, it happened just recently, General Frank McKinsey, who's the commander of the U.S. Central Command, he looked into the whole thing. He looked into all the claims. Of course, they were all made anonymously, and he said, it just has not been proved to a level of certainty that satisfies me. Basically, he said, the whole thing is bogus. It didn't happen. And you don't really get the headlines when it's debunked. You only get the headlines when you have the claims. And that really is the purpose. It's to justify the U.S. continued presence in the region, to prevent anyone from suggesting that we need to go home. And it's and unfortunately, Americans are the most propagandized people in the world.
Yes, and you know, we try to figure this out in a logical fashion. Sometimes that's a detriment because you say he does this and does something else, and it doesn't add up. But I think what helps us to sort this out would be the fact that there is a deep state. There are people behind the scenes. You say all of a sudden they. You read this in the news about these bad things. That's the media. That's the part of the deep state. And then when you get, you know, the rest of the internationals, the banking systems and the monetary system and all, they drive these sentiments. And they don't ever want to be challenged. And I see that Trump occasionally does challenge them. Yeah. And but it's not by a philosophy as much as when he gets a chance or when he can agree. I don't think he forces himself or says, well, you know, I have to order this assassination because that's what they want me to do. I sort of think it fits his personality and what he really believes, but it doesn't fit the goals of having peace in the world. I mean, this causes a lot of friction and a lot of hate. And I keep thinking, going back to 1953, look how long the results of a coup by the United States and Britain getting rid of the leader of Iran at that time.
So. Yeah, it still percolates. But, you know, the other thing we want to talk about, as long as we're talking about neocons pushing war, is Pompeo. And we both noticed the other day or yesterday that he said, we will never let Iran acquire Russian and Chinese weapons.
Right.
And that's a pretty bold statement for him to make, because my question was, what are you going to do about it? You know, what are they going to do?
Well, probably nothing, but that's appealing to some people.
Yeah.
You know, the conservative hawks that want to hear more, and certainly if it's anti-China or something, people will love that. I think the falling through is secondary, and, you know, in 6 months from now, nobody's even going to remember about this. But you know, if it's a realistic threat, it's not going to be an easy thing to do. What are they going to do? You know, with our sanctions and all. I mean, technically, if anybody does it right now, anybody that trades with Iran is sanctioned.
Sanctions,
but we can't, you know, we can't punish the Chinese and the Russians right now.
There is some speculation that Putin might agree to sell the S-400s to Iran. I don't know that I see that happening, but if that's the case, the S-400s are a defensive weapon. They prevent against missile attacks and air attacks from invaders. So I wonder what the response would be if there was a deal to sell the S-300s or S-400s to Iran. You know, the Russians and the Israelis have a very tenuously cordial relationship, and neither side wants to blow up that relationship out of the water. They do get along. They understand more in a more adult manner than our relationship with Israel, that both countries have important national interests in that region of the Middle East, and they have to find a way to get along. So what would happen? I think you're right. I think the only thing you'd see is, all right, darn it, we're going to sanction you and your cousins.
Wait, you know, I'm going to mention one more thing along the foreign policy line, short, and then talk a little bit about the coronavirus and some updates there. But the one little item in New York Times is that it's been reported that our plans are to increase the drone war in Kenya.
Mm.
And I guess a lot of Americans are sitting around and saying, when are we going to kill more Kenyans?
Yeah.
You know, and why are we doing this? Oh, well, our government would say, Al-Shabaab is there. They're bad people, you know. And yet, I don't think they're going to invade our country. We're more worried. If we're worried about our liberties, we need to look to ourselves. That's who's stealing our liberties. You know, this war on the virus is a real problem. That's what it is. But
one comment, if I can. And groups like Al-Shabaab, where did they get all these weapons that caused so much mayhem in Africa? Well, they got them from Libya after Obama and Biden and Hillary Clinton blew the country apart and all the weapons went everywhere. So, blowback.
You know, and very close to being direct, we made some money on those deals.
Yeah, yeah.
And you blow them up, and people don't worry, oh, well, we'll replace them.
Yeah, yeah.
And they live high on the hog, who manufacture them. Okay, I want to talk about an interesting thing on the Scientific American. Came out with an article on the Scientific American is known for science. And I thought they had a pretty good reputation. And they have never gotten involved in presidential politics. unless it's behind the scenes.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, they have a reputation for not doing it. But things are so bad, so destructive of our science, this is the time they are forced to endorse Biden. The Biden and all the liberals you see, you know, running in the cities and the things that they're doing, they're going to enforce, I mean, they're going to support that type of violence and science. At the same time, you know, well, they may be saying, you know, it's the science on coronavirus. Well, it just happens that Trump's a lot more correct than anybody wants to give him credit for on some of that virus stuff. He's a little confused, but it's a lot better than what the Democrats are doing and how they want to have lockdown forever and forcing little kids to wear a mask. And boy, I hear more sad stories about little kids wearing masks. And so even that very superficial review, the science is, well, the best thing is that we just get these private groups out of the business of running the politics of it. You know, separate the science and separate the medical care and all from the government. But here, now they're going to do this. Are the Republicans right on science? Well, occasionally. Are the Democrats right? Well, I think they were at once. And then they get into this argument about which companies, are they Republican companies or Democrat companies, who are going to get the money? And the money that has been spent so far on the viruses, you know, the vaccines, has been huge. And you don't hear much of a political battle over that. Trillions of trawlers is just going out there, and they never say, well, is this part of, you know, crony capitalism? Is this the kind of stuff that might lead to a more accurate description of what fascism is like? Now everybody's an anti-fascist in Republicans and Democrats, you know. but they still both support
the practice,
you know, crony capitalism, which is approaching the socialism and the fascism.
Well, you know, you reminded me when you mentioned about the kids in the masks. This is something I noticed yesterday. Our own Lake Jackson Rec Center, that's where I used to go exercise before they decided you had to wear a mask. And I think Ronnie goes there too. But they put up a big thing yesterday. Hey, kids, we're going to have tennis lessons, tennis camp for kids from junior high through high school. It's going to be great. You got to show up. And then you look at the fine print. We are observing COVID-19 protocols. Masks must be worn. So I'm thinking, you know, it's a little warm down here. These kids are out there in the heat of the tennis courts running around, and they're going to force them to put masks on. I mean, these people are literally insane. But anyway, the point that you are making on this is trust the science, we're always told. Trust the science. And this goes to your point that you've always made. You need to keep science and medicine away from government. But this is the opposite. Who's science? And this is like the Soviet Union, where everything is politicized.
It used to be that a good university had good science, and they would be recognized for it. But for the last 100 years, it's been growing where the universities depend, you know, on government money, which is people's money, tax money. And they have done that, and now there is no confidence whatsoever in it. And they're driven by how do they get the next grant. And they have to accommodate. You know, this whole idea, this one drug company I saw received $1 billion, you know, and they, as a result, they've been raising their own prices. $1 billion to develop a vaccine, which is, you know, means that it's not going to be worthwhile. Yeah. I mean, when you think of all those companies out there spending unlimited amount of money, billions of dollars, rapidly trying to do something that needs more deliberate discussion, there should be a debate in the universities. And there are some good people in the universities, but they're not heard from, you know, where they could have a debate. But it shouldn't be, you know, Republican against Democrat and think they're going to sort it out and find out who's really correct on the science when they don't have much brains to do anything else.
Yeah, that's true. So we have some more things on Corona. We wanted to talk about UK, the UK government.
Yeah, the UK, they're getting worried about this, and they don't have enough policemen. Well, how are we going to know what the people are doing? We need more spies. Everybody, what does that remind you of? It's sickening. I mean, the authoritarian uses the people against their families and friends and neighbors to tell the government to be in good with the government and be rewarded. You know, about the sickest, it probably didn't happen all the time or very often. The sickest story I can think of is when a teenager or a kid, reports. This is when, the worst kind of dictators like Hitler or somebody else, the kids would turn in their parents and they'd shoot the parents and reward the kids.
Yeah.
I mean, that I can't think of anything sicker than that. But this whole thing is sort of reminding, but the, guess what? The people don't even like this idea. They say this is not a good idea, and this is in Great Britain. So maybe maybe we'll wake up. There's a few people doing this now, and they should pay attention, because believe me, the people who would like to make this epidemic endemic worldwide constantly, even when the virus has been dissipated and disappeared and there's no problem, the problems will still be the authoritarians wanting to have these regulations. They're still going to control the kids. They've controlled the education for so long, and that's been some of our problem. That's where the kids have learned all this stuff, and that's been going on for a long time. And, of course, for the federal government to be really very much involved. I remember a major step happened in the 50s. I was in college, and that was when Eisenhower got the HEW, and there was arguments. This is just to help people out, and that the government will never get involved in the education and the details of education. Mm. And that's why the educators went along with it. And look at that. They're totally dependent on it now, and that's why the education is so poor. So not only is it in science, but really in political thought, and economics and all that, that the government controls. I think they're part of the deep state, the few people that run the government.
Well, this UK thing is really disturbing because, Boris Johnson, the prime minister, unveiled his 666 plan, which is that only six people can gather and this and that and the other. So the UK policing minister, Kit Malthouse, he has suggested now that people call the police on their neighbors if they see their neighbors violating the 666 rule. There's seven people in that backyard having a barbecue, I'm going to call the police. And this is what he's suggesting people, the police aren't happy about it because the last thing they want to do is be getting thousands of police calls, from Karens, peeking behind their curtains. So it's a real problem. But the reason we bring it up is because we're worried it's going to come here. And I think it's a legitimate worry because you do have people bothering people who don't want to put a mask on.
This is so silly. And the question that people should ask those who believe this stuff, we can't have more than six people. So we'll watch that. And we have to be 6 feet apart. Yeah. All that. Okay. Explain to me, how does it happen that there's going to be more people dying from coronavirus if there's seven people in a crowd? What makes the magic of seven being it? So why isn't it five? Why isn't it 20? Oh, six people. You know what's going on.
Science.
It's science. This is it. But the whole thing is that the people are so willing to go along with this that and accept that that's a real problem. The people should wake up. Take a better look at this. I do have one more comment.
Okay, well, I'll close with a couple of charts.
Let me just give this I'll finish up after you. Okay, in this process, the government and they're saying there's people are lining up and they're worried and there's going to be so many people and they need more. Evidently, the lines aren't very long. And you know what they're worried about? They're worried about anybody wanting it. So they want to make it free. Free doesn't mean that we don't pay for it. It's the people who hate the idea have to pay it for the people who want something free. So they said it's going to be free.
Free vaccine.
Free vaccine. And all I could think of is they have to remember when it's something is for free, it's not worth very much.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's true. Well, I'm going to close with a couple of graphs, and we're going to have to skip the first one because we got so busy talking we didn't even put it up there. So go ahead and skip over that one. Go to the next one if you can. Yeah, this is interesting. I talk about Alex Rodriguez a lot, and he's done some great work. But here's what I fear, Dr. Paul, because remember, they changed in Texas. Now they're starting to talk about cases per day, not bringing cases from 2 months old and making things look a lot worse in Texas than they were. Well, now that they actually have a more sensible and accurate way of looking at the testing data, if you look at that red curve on the bottom, it's fascinating because by the time at the second the mask mandate came from Governor Abbott, the virus had already passed its peak. And this is what Rodriguez said. The masks did El Zippo, nada. The virus had virused. So Abbott, if he does ever get rid of this stupid mask mandate, he's going to say, hey, I saved the day with my mask mandate. The actual science said not. It had already peaked. It was already going down by the time he issued this ridiculous, ridiculous mandate. And let's go to the next one here. And now that we're looking at actually day of death deaths in Texas, rather than bringing deaths from months ago, take a look at what the actual chart looks like of day of deaths from COVID in Texas. It is so far down, it's hard to justify shutting down these bars, shutting down these other establishments, the misery that people are suffering. And let's look at, okay, hospitals. We always say that hospitals is really the only accurate way right now to measure what's going on in Texas because they've screwed up everything else. Let's look at this final one. This is also from Alex. And this is important. This just came out. The Texas COVID-19 hospital census, he points out, still waiting for a Governor Abbott announcement. The census of the hospitals is down 69.6% from the peak in July 22nd. It's down 390 beds week over week. The beds, percent of beds being used by COVID-19 patients in Texas hospitals is down to 5.9%. There is no risk right now with the virus dying out of these hospitals being overloaded. So why are we still flattening the curve?
Politics. I want to finish off by suggesting and encouraging people to get really upset with this. And I know you feel frustrated. You know, if you call your congressman, Nancy Pelosi, if that's your congresswoman, she's not going to change her mind. No, we have to be involved. But when you get enough numbers, and it's already working, the science is actually on our side, and people are backing down. They've been backing down in this country, too. So they need a little bit more pressure. So if you happen to know anybody in Texas or you live in Texas, get the biggest list possible. Keep calling. They will respond to numbers. If they just think it's Daniel and I, you know, we don't carry a lot of weight, you know. So we need you. We need you out there. And we need your mailing list and everything. But I'd bombard Austin and Abbott. Because if enough people do that, they have to wake up. If we were promoting something that we didn't believe in and was completely wrong and would have nothing to do with solving our problems, it'd be pretty hard to sell. But I believe that we're basically on the right track of what we're doing. And nobody has perfect knowledge about anything. But basically, lockdown and this lack of ability to protect our own liberties and how we live and take care of ourselves, we're right on that. We just don't know. We have the statistics, we have history, we have science on our side, but we don't have enough pressure in Austin. And it's really disgusting because every once in a while I want to be the optimist. We'll get rid of this. We just have to wake up a couple of people. But actually, I think if tomorrow they look at our stuff and say, boy, these guys are right. You know, we don't even have a virus to worry about. How are we going to do this? They've caught us. And sometimes they respond, they caught us. What are we going to do? We're going to have to get something new because they weren't worrying about the health of the people or the kids. If they were caring about this, they wouldn't be doing this to the kids and doing it to our schools and doing it to our small business people if they cared. A lack of care and idiocy, you know, you got to set it up. But no matter what they're doing is very, very damaging. It's very damaging to the social order. It's very damaging to our economy. It's very damaging to common sense. And it's about time they heard more from us. So I would ask you to consider that, sending a message to, especially right now, we're working harder on Abbott. But anybody you feel like, you don't have to write letters and complain in South Dakota. They're doing the right thing in South Dakota. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.